The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 19th of November, 2020. On the podcast today, Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, covers news from the following companies: AstraZeneca. We also talk about BT, Royal Mail, Kingfisher, and Johnson Matthey. And, of course, at the end of the podcast, as always, I have two lists for you: the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs, too. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. We'll also see lots of other content. Let's have a look what's there. Guild Sports signs gaming star Flick as it enters Fortnite franchise. Naked Wine sees revenue grow. Agronomics is there. Open Orphan transformed into industry leader. Lots of content right there at voxmarkets.co.uk. Also, our COVID-19 index. Let's have a look who the biggest riser is today. It's Tizian Life Sciences. That's up pretty much 8% to 95 pence. Biggest fall of the day. Bit of a surprise here, I thought. Some good news from Gfinity yesterday. And they're down, 8% pretty much to 3.5 pence. But there's some warrants outstanding. So, they do get sold a bit. But, of course, it provides financing for the company. So, anyway, check that out. Plus other stuff at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com. You all right, Chris?
Yeah, very well, thanks. Yeah, pretty busy. My God, it's quite a busy old week in terms of UK reporting. Mm. But there you go, better be busier than not.
Yeah, do you know what I'm thinking? And I said this yesterday to somebody else. I'm thinking, if you notice, AstraZeneca came up with new, it's only phase two, which is obviously a smaller trial of clinical people. They came up with very positive data, and they're showing in the 90s again efficacy rates on a vaccine, a COVID vaccine. But the markets didn't react at all, pretty much. In fact, they dipped into the negative, I think, pretty much. It looked quite positive at the start. And even though sort of Moderna came out with even better figures than Pfizer, and then Pfizer came out again with even better figures, the market's getting a bit blasé with the figures, you know? And these the efficacy rates are very good, and the safety data is very good. Of course, it's early doors. Of course it is. I think the next thing that's going to push the markets up, I think, is approval. And there's obviously the emergency approval going in via Pfizer. Because we've got a gap, haven't we, here now? We can see that the issue is contagion rates are going up, and we're still in lockdown, and yet vaccines aren't going to be widely distributed until, so they're going to start at the end of this year probably, but widely distributed Q1, end of Q1, Q2 next year. So this gap, isn't there, in economics of, you know, businesses going to be locked down or restricted in some way for a long period yet, and then people are not going to get back to normal yet, and then we got the vaccines. It's almost like, it reminds me of the Titanic. If you saw that film where they said, how long will it take us to go underwater? And they said, about 2 hours. And what time, how long will it take the boat to get to us? 4 hours? And so there's that gap. You can't bridge that gap, you know?
Yeah, no, look, markets always look forward as well, which also confuses the issue.
Yes, yes.
And clearly you could say, look, people are probably wondering, you know, people have come to the markets in recent years, probably thinking, Mike, what on earth is happening? You know, at the start of the pandemic issue back in sort of February, March last year, this year, we had the lows of the market, it seems. So, you know, you can already see that the market factors things in very quickly. We've obviously had some factoring in clearly over recent months, hence the rise in markets and the rotation within markets about the scope and potential for vaccines and products giving some kind of positive trade-off there. Mm. So the market always does look forward. I think the key here undoubtedly is really twofold. The first thing is, do we actually have some products that are both practically viable or not? And clearly, I think the Moderna one, the one that was sort of the second one to kind of come out, because that potentially it could be utilized at a lower temperature, I think that makes a lot more practical sense. Yeah. This Zeneca vaccine, could be interesting too. And, you know, thank goodness for human ingenuity. So I think that's a real positive. The other thing I think you've got to watch out for is that juxtapose because with all these updates, is that we've also got clearly worsening data in terms of the realities on the ground in America, in terms of people being impacted by the virus and everything else. Whilst Europe, there's a few tentative signs that we're starting to get the other side of it. And once again, the numbers are getting slightly better, still very bad, clearly, but slightly better, opening up the prospects for a bit more liberalisation in terms of the economic backdrop over upcoming months. In America, it's getting worse. There's lots of pushes and pulls and everything else. Clearly, if you're sitting in Asia, you're in China or something, you're thinking, you know, we're thinking about recovery, full recovery for 2021 after a positive economic growth in 2020. It just depends what your perspective is.
Yeah.
So yeah, markets as always, it's not easy.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's the push and pull of that. Like you say, that, you know, that we look ahead. We know by this time next year, pretty much, you know, the markets could be back to normal, even though the real economies won't. But there's that volatility, like that gap we're saying now, the gap between the vaccine rescue boat coming and us going underwater for a little bit, you know, like the Titanic. And so, you know, how long will it take? So, yeah, and like I said, there's that volatility. So I always think, though, you know, if you're confident with the company and you know the long-term outlook is good, you know, the probability is very good, the share price will get better, the valuation generation get better over the next 3 to 5 years, then the dips are there to be bought, you know, if you've done plenty of research and you've got cash.
Yep.
And I just see it as an opportunity, you know?
Absolutely. I think, yeah, and I would supplement that by saying, clearly the big debate at the moment is how much do you embrace rotation, i.e. because what's driven markets over the last couple of years or so, particularly much of the last 6 or 8 months, has been those sort of working from home beneficiaries, be it technology, be it biotech or something akin to that. Now, clearly, if you've got an economy which at some level is recovering, is rebounding, is regaining that kind of normal look from 2019 or something, then at some point you've got to think about the more cyclical companies, the more rotation friendly companies. That's a good debate. And so I would say, depending on your views towards those companies and towards the environment, will determine, you know, where you're finding value at the moment. Yet to me, it's an active market. It's an interesting market. It's not without risk, but it's certainly not without opportunities too, because not everything is factored in still.
Yeah, I tell you, you're a fundamental guy. I know that, and I know you look at the chart now and again, but pay less attention to that. But I was looking yesterday because a friend of mine, we all jumped into BT a while back. We tried to do this challenge on the weekend podcast about 2 years back. This must have been where we try to get, I think 20% from each stock and double it up under the next one, put it onto the next one. And I jumped out, and Pete jumped out, and then Steve, a mate, didn't. And so, what's he doing? He kept holding on to BT, and it grinded lower and lower and lower. And you know, these big stocks, they're like oil tankers. Once they're in a trend, and I looked at something like Centrica and even BT, they keep going down for years. But of late, they've been bouncing, and we talked about recently about bouncing off that £1 level. They've been forming a nice base, which they haven't done before for years, and they've just gone above. That massive Pfizer day last week, or whatever it was, they rose by, let's have a look at that rise there, about 12% in one day, no, it was 13%, 12.5%, and then they've gone above that 200-day moving average. They've popped above that, which is very positive and very bullish, and they've gone above that and traded above that now for 3 or 4 or 5 days. They haven't done that for years. And I'm thinking, and Stephen mate said, well, I'm still well underwater. My average is about 265, I think. And I said, well, listen, you'd be surprised at the trend in these stocks. When the trend changes, like I said, they can keep going for a long time. Momentum and all the funds go back into it, and you know, big money goes back into it, and they get some positive news. They can go on, can't they, following that uptrend for a long time, you know? So I said, hold on to them, you know?
Yeah, absolutely right. It's the sort of stock which is, you know, it was very well owned, and now it's become very under-owned by your average typical institutional investor. As we talked about the other week, actually, I think the story there, you've got a newish management team in. Clearly, 5G is interesting for BT. Obviously, they own the EE brand as well as obviously all the fixed line stuff and broadband stuff. So, you know, they've got everything, but they've had to invest some money into the future. Otherwise, you're toast in the telecom space. You know, there are enough competitive operators out there. So I think they've got a good opportunity. The key really is making sure that they both at an individual level as well as an institutional level, they encourage people to use their broadband and related products, because if they can do that and then cross-sell also some increasing number of mobile or get people to have these sort of multi-offering sort of triple play, quad play sort of products, then, you know, that's a good business for them. So, yeah, BT at least are engaging with the future. We'll see. Personally, I do own the shares. I think they're a value stock here. And I think, yeah, the scope for them to return to sort of the somewhere closer to the £2 level is very, very doable. And obviously that would represent a very attractive appreciation from here.
Yeah, yeah, marvellous stuff. Okay, let's get to some today's news, stocks. What's happening, Chris? Who's got news out?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's actually stocks of not a dissimilar sort of akin kind of profile to BT in a roundabout way. Because when I think about something like Royal Mail, I think it's a bit like BT in the sense that obviously there's history in the public sector ownership. Yeah. Obviously, it's now on the market. It's certainly fallen out of favour. I mean, I was looking at Royal Mail stock, at the chart, and it peaked out at about £6. And it fell to about a third of that level. It's bounced back a bit since. Mm-hmm. So it certainly had a bit of a roller coaster ride, despite being superficially, obviously, quite a defensive business at a certain level. You know, the Royal Mail, you think, has been around for ages. Natural monopoly at sort of your day-to-day post, and obviously a big player in other kind of commercial distribution and postal distribution and related as well. But yeah, it's been an interesting last few months. I mean, clearly their bread and butter business of sort of ordinary post has kind of fallen off a cliff. You know, there's some structural reasons for that, but there's also clearly some coronavirus related reasons for why that's impacted. But by contrast, their parcels business, as again, you're embracing a structural trend, the rise of e-commerce, but also a tactical trend, the fact that parcels areas obviously become much more pertinent because we've all shifted much more to online purchasing and related for our day-to-day stuff. Royal Mail have picked up an element of that business too, so you can see that sort of tension in their results today. You know, essentially for the first time ever, the parcels business has got bigger, generated more revenues than the day-to-day post business. You know, the kind of posty putting a few envelopes through your door, etc. Which, you know, is a big moment. But actually, it's the future, of course, of the Royal Mail. This is what it's all about. And it's interesting. I don't own the stock at the moment. I have owned it in the past, made a bit of money on it, avoided the disaster moments. But it does strike me as if this is, again, they're at sort of like a big regime shift with this company. And if you look at the results today, there's ifs and buts and whatever else. Clearly, there's got to be a lot of network changes. And obviously, that raises the risk of industrial action and other things like that. They talk about the unions a bit in the release today. But you have to say, in terms of their parcels business, Royal Mail are actually not in a bad position. And that's a structural shift which ain't going away. You know, we might get a virus and everything else, but we're not the genie, the sort of the online delivery genie is out of the bottle and ain't going back in fully.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know what? Their chart is looking very good as well. It's like literally, and again, that's been in a downtrend since 2018. So again, it's one of those stocks that's like an oil tanker. Once it's going in one direction, to put the brakes on and turn around and go the other way, it's very hard. And but it's again above, even better than BT. But I'd say a bit further on than BT there. But you've got what's called the golden crossing. That's the 50-day moving average crossing over the 200-day moving average, which is generally regarded as a good start of an uptrend. So yeah, look at that. That March, such a buying opportunity. 128 it got down to then, now it's 305. So, wow.
My goodness. You know, I didn't realize it got that low. Crikey. I thought it was, I kind of had £2 in my head or something, but there you go. My goodness.
Yeah,
these things can move about because clearly the big fear is that ultimately Royal Mail, by becoming much more of a parcels business, is then having to compete with, you know, your FedExes and your DHLs and whatever, while still having all the hassle about maintaining the cost base in order to give us all the postage to the door delivery option. And obviously that may be suboptimal, but yeah, everything has a price. You know, Royal Mail at least doesn't have that much debt. That's one positive they've got. And even BT's got, it's not too bad a balance sheet, BT. They've got a bit of pension debt, but they're not too bad a balance sheet, mm-hmm. which is what you want. Well, you don't want all those changes and then having a whacking amount of debt at the same time.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Cool, that's Royal Mail. What's next, Chris?
Well, next one up is Kingfisher, which again is a bit of a renaissance, actually, in the last 6 or 8 months. And Kingfisher, obviously, we know primarily as B&Q, but it's Screwfix, actually. It's been a very successful sort of supplementary business that they own as well. But they're their two sort of core and key businesses. And, you know, particularly Screwfix is doing great guns, has been doing great guns for a few years now. But B&Q has been struggling in the sense that it's a very competitive space, the whole DIY business. And even though some of the peers have gone bust and other ones have sort of had kind of internal issues, you know, Homebase, for example, it's been a really tough market, not just in this country, but also in France, where they've also got a big business that they own, the Castorama brand there as well. But I have to say, again, some of the, I kind of always quite liked Kingfisher, but I never quite sort of converted that into actually buying the shares. I should have done back at the time of the sort of the pandemic fear peak, which I guess was sort of February, March time. Because the thing with Kingfisher is that they've done very well out of the fact that people have gone back into things like DIY, perhaps got into it a bit, had the time to do it or the inclination or whatever it might be. And obviously something like a B&Q or Castorama in France, that they're at that vanguard of benefiting from such trends. So Kingfisher shares have gone up very nicely over the last 6 or 8 months. Today's numbers were all right. They sort of talked about a bit of forward progress. Screwfix still doing well. B&Q, Castorama doing well as well. But in a way, it's funny. The shares, when I last looked, down 3-4%. And it's almost as if we've had sort of the superficially the difficult moments, you know, the uncertainty, the fear, and they kind of done a good job in that sort of environment. And now the first inclination that things might be getting perspectively a little bit better for 2021, a bit more return back to normality. And then all the big fears as to, hang on, do I really want to own this one or not, sort of start to rise again. Shares, they got to that, back to that £3 level, and I sort of run out of steam a bit, so they're down 3-4% when I last looked today.
Yeah. But again, do you know what? It's always galling to look back at that March dip when it got down. They spiked down to, at one point, you must have been quick on the uptake, but they got down on 23rd of March. The low of the day was £1.01. And and then it went, it's now it's just gone above £3. So, you know, who say you can't double your money in big stocks? You can, if you get a big crash. Cool.
Absolutely. But you look, you pull that chart back a little bit further and you see that, let's say 2-3 years ago, that sort of £3 and change level was a real resistance point. They were struggling to kind of get above that level. Of course, they crashed down, as you said. So my feeling is, King, of the ones we talked about today, yeah, BT, absolutely. I think that's an interesting one, still evolving, etc. Raw Mail, yeah, there might still be something there. But Kingfisher feels, as I say, the reaction today to superficially, which were pretty good numbers, actually, a pretty good update, some nice observations about the business. Kind of the shares, kind of, it's a bit by the rumour, sell on the fact, and the fact is pretty good, but the share is just, as I say, rolling over a bit now that it's got to that circa £3 level.
Yeah, do you know what, another stock, out of the three we've looked at on the chart here, they've got, the three of them have basically been in downtrend since 2018, and that March sell-off has you know, given them a big bounce, and but you're right, it's rolled over, it topped out at 325, and now it's the second high after that was a lower high, which is never good, now another lower high, three lower highs. That's not very good at all. Cool. Anything else there, Chris, happening?
Yeah, final quick one would be Johnson Matthey. One I do own. JMAT is a sort of as I'm sure many people know, it's got a variety of interests, but they include things like obviously catalytic converters, some refining aspects in terms of PGMs, you know, platinum group metals and related. Mm-hmm. They've got their fingers in the pie in terms of clean tech and even that they've got some capabilities on batteries and related. So quite a kind of a broad, but certainly sort of a technology, sort of next gen technology focused business, kind of sitting between kind of the chemicals world and some other related tech areas. So I've always quite liked the biz, thought it's a clever company with real intellectual capital to it. You know, they've struggled. If you look at the share, they too were kind of impacted by the sad, obviously, coronavirus and related sharp sell-off back in February, March. The shares, I think, fell to about £20 then, perhaps a touch lower. they've kind of been grinding back since, and they've sort of now reattained the 25 quid level, which I think sort of, again, quite important. This one feels as if kind of the world is coming towards it and kind of improving. Mm. There's clearly always a lot of fear with this one about, well, hang on, if people aren't going to be buying cars or stuff like that, then maybe the catalytic converter market is not going to be as strong. And, you know, that's a reasonable fear that certainly impacted the stock. But I have to say here, there are things in a lot of pies would be my instinct. So, yeah, I still like this one. Still think it's grinding back slowly. And fingers crossed. 30 quid, here we come, maybe.
Yeah. I think it needs to get over that. Like I said, it's tried to get over that 26 quid level, and it's had a bit of a problem there because it's tried again just now. But maybe it needs to come back a little bit and then have another run at it. But again, it's, you know, this is above. It's broke above that 200-day moving average. You've got a golden cross happening, so it's looking like it's starting a new uptrend. But of course, it takes a couple of times sometimes to break into new areas of resistance. So it'll give it maybe a third time lucky, maybe. And let's look at the gap to that. September and November. So that's the last time it tried to beat that 26 quid, but maybe another couple of months it'll do it. Who knows?
That's right, yeah. One to watch at the very least.
Marvellous. J-Matt there. Chris, thanks for that, and we'll speak to you next week.
Sounds planned. See you then.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five on themarket.com. Do you know what? It's a great bunch of stats I was looking at recently with On The Market. In fact, I'll open it up right now, if you don't mind, and give you a few of them. I was going to cover them in the weekend video. But it's interesting to note. So the biggest, the market leader here, of course, is Rightmove. And it's got a huge sort of market cap compared to On The Market. It's 63 times the value, 63 times. And yet it only has 15 times the revenue, only has website traffic five times more than On The Market. It only has 26% more estate agents on the books than On The Market. On The Market has three quarters the amount of properties on its books as Rightmove. On The Market is growing in every metric where Rightmove isn't. And On The Market is owned 65% owned by estate agents. So that gap is huge. 62 times the value of On The Market. And On The Market share prices have been rising quite rapidly of late. So it's worth looking into On The Market. I hold stock in them because I think they're growing very well. And I think there'll be a challenger to Rightmove, and there's plenty of upside there. At four, Verici DX, non-moving day. At three, Zinwor Lithium, up sort of 10% pretty much to 8.1. At two, AFC, and that's what's down 4.5%, 25 pence. At two, Source Bio, down 1.5 to 171. And yeah, that's it, the top five most followed. Most liked RNSs are as follows. Conroy Gold and Natural Resources exercise warrants, really. Emotion Group trading update, proposed placing and subscription. At three, Remote Modern Systems Holdings and Company. At who is selling here? Braveheart, down to 0% there. At two, Biotech Growth Trust, net asset value. And at one, Open Orphan, collaboration with HicVac and Welcome Trust. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.